Ready on camera one with Q.
You're listening to Studio 360, and I am Kurt Anderson.
And
Q Howard.
I don't have to tell you things are bad.
We must not confuse dissent with disloyalty.
I'm not just an entertainer. I'm an influence, a wielder of opinion, a force.
For the last few decades, Hollywood has had a pretty romantic view of journalism. Most of the time, we see journalists fighting the good fight, comforting the afflicted, afflicting the comfortable, and all that. But not in the new movie Nightcrawler. I don't think I've ever seen a movie with a darker view of the news business. Jake Gyllenhaal plays Lou Bloom, a freelance videographer. He roams the streets of Los Angeles after dark, taping the bloody aftermaths of car crashes and shootouts for a TV station. Bloom will do just about anything to get grisly tape, even if that means he's got to manufacture the bad news himself.
So you know who killed those people?
One of them, quite possibly, yes.
You gotta call the cops.
And we will, at the right time.
Dan Gilroy has written movies like The Bourne Legacy, but Nightcrawler is the first one he's directed, which makes it all the more impressive. And he's making his directorial debut at 55, which should please all the middle-aged among us. Dan Gilroy, welcome to Studio 360.
Thank you for having me.
So this world of crime and mayhem videographers is real, right? There are people who make their livings doing this night after night in L.A.?
It is real. The market is particularly vibrant in Los Angeles. You'll find them in other urban areas around the United States. You'll find some in New York, some in Chicago.
How did you begin getting interested in making a movie around one of these people in this world?
I think the genesis of the idea goes back to when I learned about a photographer named Ouija from the 1930s in New York.
Yeah.
He was the first person to put a police scanner in a car and take photographs for the tabloids. And a number of years ago, I heard about the people who are doing the modern equivalent of the job, who are these people with a dozen scanners in Los Angeles. And I thought it was a unique world that I'd never seen in film.
So I understand that you and Jake Gyllenhaal actually hung around with and shadowed one of these crime crash videographers in L.A. for a few nights.
We did, actually. He was our technical advisor. His name is Howard Reichbrook. He runs Reichbrook Media Group, one of the larger Stringer outfits in Los Angeles. And Jake and I and Robert Elswit, the DP, our cinematographer, went out. And they were harrowing nights. I mean, the first call that we went to at 100 miles an hour was a horrific car crash. Very difficult to see. But Howard very professionally shot it and edited the footage and it sold it and moved on. And it's a bit like fishing in the sense that you never know. Each call has its own value. And it could be only a few hundred dollars, but it could be up in the thousands of dollars. So there's an excitement to it.
And as you were writing and inventing Jake Gyllenhaal's character, Lou Bloom, did you end up thinking of him as a psychopath or sociopath or just a relentless and extremely unscrupulous striver?
The doorway for the character for me was an empathy and an understanding that there's many millions of young people around the world who can't find work, or when they find work, it's piecemeal in the form of internships. So I really approached the character originally as somebody who was desperate to work.
Excuse me, sir. I'm looking for a job. I'm a hard worker. I set high goals. My motto is, if you want to win the lottery, you have to make the money to buy a ticket. So what do you say? I could start tomorrow, or even why not tonight?
No, I'm not hiring.
And I began to craft him as a classic hero, and then it didn't feel like it was plugging into the story in the way that I wanted it to. And so I started to craft him as an anti-hero, and his maladjusted emotional side started coming out.
Interesting.
And while it's true that he would fit the classic diagnostic label of sociopath or even psychopath, our aim was always at the end of the film that perhaps you might say to yourself, maybe the problem isn't just Lou, maybe the problem, Jake's character, maybe the problem is the world that creates a character like this or a person like this and ultimately rewards this character for all of his bad behavior.
Right. So was that an idea at the beginning of that, oh, this isn't just about, you know, these stringers driving around fast in L.A. trying to shoot crash scenes. It is about business and America in the 21st century?
Very much so. We approached it as a success story. Not to celebrate it, but again, to try to keep that connection that he's moving through a landscape in which the one authority figure in the film, represented by Rene Russo in the form of Nina as the news director.
Accidents play, cars, buses, trains, planes, fires.
A bloody.
Well, graphic. The best and clearest way that I can phrase it to you, Lou, to capture the spirit of what we air, is think of our newscast as a screaming woman running down the street with her throat cut.
She not only does not provide any moral yardstick, she erases the moral yardstick and just encourages him to cross any boundary he can to satisfy her station's demand for product.
Of course, one could say also that, look, it shows that moxie and pluck count in America.
Yes, and I'll tell you something else. James Newton Howard's score is a very untraditional score in the sense that there's so much darkness in our film that any new film, the music would usually be used to underline it. That somehow it would be like, okay, now come the taut strings to understand that this guy's crazy, or mm-hmm. here comes the dark, brooding music because now a body's being dragged. James and I decided early on that every cue in the film, literally if you listen to it, is celebrating in its soaring majesty and its energy, celebrating something bad that's going on. The score gets inside their heads and helps lead the audience down a path where at the end you go like, wait a minute, I was committed to this character and he's horrible and he's succeeding, but I kind of appreciate that he's succeeding.
You made Nightcrawler with pretty much your whole family. Your older brother Tony produced it. Your twin brother John edited it. Your wife is Renee Russo, who plays the cynical news director. Did that make it different on set than other movies you've been involved in?
It made it tremendously easier. And easier is not even the right word. I was the beneficiary of having being surrounded by people who are not only talented, but were there to protect me and what I was trying to do. And working with Renee was extra special because as a writer, I often give Renee my script or my work to have her look at it from an acting standpoint. So we collaborate on a fairly regular basis. And to have her on the set, it was just a continuation of something that we have at home. So it was, I would use the word fun. Even though it was a lot of work and a lot of stress, it made it fun.
Not only did you make this film with your family, you are the son of the screenwriter and playwright Frank Gilroy. Did growing up in and around showbiz and a schmuck with an Underwood, as they say.
That's probably what he would call himself because he writes on an Underwood. He still does.
That didn't scare you off?
No, in an odd way. I think what it did for both Johnny and Tony and I is it demystified the business. I think anytime you have a parent, a mother, a father who has a profession and you watch it up close, you just start to think, well, that's something I could make a living at, rather than, you know, if you don't have that, you might say, like, well, is that even possible?
Right.
How do you do that?
Right.
So it was a tremendous benefit.
Well, I'm also interested looking at your biography, your brother's biography, your father's biography. You all began as writers, wrote for a while. Your father in his 40s starts directing. Your brother at 50 starts directing. You're in your 50s, you start directing. A, that's kind of late to start directing feature films.
Mm-hmm.
And B, given I've heard that in Hollywood there's a certain amount of ageism. They don't say, hey, dude, you're 50. Forget it. You're over.
Well, the benefit of being a writer, and when you write a spec script, is you control the material. So you could be 11 years old.
Yeah.
And you could be 99 years old. But if you write a script that people feel is commercial and has value, the ageism or whatever utterly disappears. On one level, this business is extraordinarily ageist and sexist and many other ists. But it also, at the same time, it's a hyper-free market. And if you have a script or a piece of material, like I said, that has value, they don't really care who you are.
That's interesting.
They want to get involved in it.
Right. So when you're just pitching, and then it's all, well, he's too old. But once you have an actual thing that they want, they just want that thing.
You know, again, you talk about growing up in a house with a writer. That was a lesson that I very much took to heart, that if you want something to happen, don't wait for the phone to ring. Make it happen yourself.
Well, and of course, the darker version of that, as I hear you describing it, is, of course, the Lou Bloom character who has no training, no connections, no anything. But he, by God, I'm going to go do it and get tape that they have to buy because it's so great.
I think I see him as an uber capitalist, as somebody who sees only the bottom line, and he's decided that he's going to pursue his own goals at any cost.
Dan Gilroy, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Dan Gilroy's movie Nightcrawler opens this weekend.